Greetings. You're now listening to the most handsome and intellectually superior specimens on Earth. I could be wrong, but I doubt it. Starts now.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever time of day it is where you are. Hope this is doing well. Welcome to another episode of I Could Be Wrong, But I Doubt It. My name is Fresh. Thankful that you decided to join us today. Going to go ahead and jump right into it. I'd like to introduce my partner, who is a connoisseur of all things cultural. He is my partner, podcast crime, Reg. What it do, player?
Hey, man. Fresh, I hadn't seen you since the last time I saw you, brother. What's happening with you?
Man, as I always say, man, world gone mad. You know, we floating through this Black History Month thing, man. We're gonna talk about that today. Still trying to stay COVID free.
I know that's right, bro.
It's
a guy at work, man. They say he has a 104-degree temperature for like 4 days straight. I'm like, how is he breathing?
Right. I mean, that normally shuts down your organs, bro.
I know. It's
crazy. So, at my former job, man, they like a couple months before I actually left, man, or before they laid me off. But we had somebody to actually die from COVID.
Damn.
Yeah. It's crazy, man.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this shit is real, man. I mean, COVID is real. It's just like however you feel about vaccines or, America's history of experimentation on people of color or whatever, you know, which is a documented fact. The shit's not, it's not like we lie. It's one of the dark tales of history, if you will. But it's not like we lie about the shit. The apprehension is real. But no matter how you feel about this shit, man, you have to understand that shit is real out there, man. It's real. And the fact that the previous administration politicized everything from wearing a mask, being, you know, symbolizing having your liberties taken away, to calling the virus a hoax and a hoax. I mean, it, in the meantime, we got 500,000 people dead, bro.
Yeah.
It's just crazy, man. It's just crazy. Yeah. Hey, before we get into the Black History thing, man, there's one thing that we didn't talk about on one of the previous episodes about politics, man. We didn't talk about the fact that the House is moving to what's that crazy bitch's name from Georgia? Give a name.
Who lost the Senate?
No. Not Loeffler. The one that's in the House. The one that's a QAnon conspirator, believer.
Yeah.
You know who I'm talking about.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. I can't recall the name.
Right. But anyway, they're moving to relieve her of her committee duties in the House. It's from the committees that she had been appointed to. And I'm thinking, like, you know, as a Democrat, man, I'm thinking, like, I need all my Democrats who have the majority to be like, look, bitch, you got to go. Coming off the committee is one thing. Your ass need to be gone. Because if you were working at a company and said those type of things, your ass be gone. You be gone.
Yeah. But like you said before, they don't put pressure on the neck. They don't put pressure on them. So
they don't do it.
Very and passive.
Real passive about it. And there's another this is the bruh. I thought that they were lying. I read this I was watching one of my favorite TV shows, Real Time with Bill Maher. I'll miss it for 4 weeks and I'll binge watch all four of them, right? But
okay.
But anyway, he was talking about, and I thought he makes a lot of jokes, political jokes about Republicans and things like that. And I really thought that he was joking, but he was talking about the Republican representative in the House from Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
This chick is a freaking high school dropout, dude.
What?
Hmm. And she was quoted as saying, you know, I had, she was a teen mom. So, you know, she was, you know, obviously wasn't brought up right. Ain't that what they say about black folks? Obviously, you were brought up wrong.
Yeah.
So she was a teen mom, and she said something to the effect that I had to worry about, you know, taking care of my child or doing a term paper or something like that. Or so I had to make a choice. Okay. I mean, honestly, from just a, you know, the grown man in me says, okay, I respect the decision that you have to make because everybody comes from different circumstances. You got to make certain decisions. I get it. But I feel like that the Republican bar is so low for representation that whenever you throw the teen mom, high school dropout, GED carrying person as your representative to represent you, that's a real low bar, man.
Yeah.
That's a real low bar. And I'm just thinking it's kind of indicative of the, and before somebody blows the comment page up about, you know, people with GEDs, there's nothing wrong with a GED. What I'm talking specifically about the mindset of Republicans. But they don't even care about that. As long as you are anti-abortion, pro-gun, and stingy when it comes to spending money.
Yeah.
With spending money to take care of things that affect communities outside of the white community. As long as you can do those three things, you're fine. Because frankly speaking, say for instance, I wasn't who I was. And that I wanted to sell out. Okay. If I said, hey, I'm anti-abortion, I believe in the Second Amendment.
Mm-hmm.
I think everybody should pull themselves up by their own bootstraps. You don't get no handouts. Can you imagine as a educated man with a master's degree, how far I could really go if I just flipped that? And I start getting on social media and I start talking about that. And I say that to say, not that I would ever do that, but I say that to make the point that that's their mindset. As long as you can espouse those type of rhetorical values and shape them into something that galvanizes a certain group of people. Because nobody loves a coon more than the Republican Party. Nobody loves a coon more. I'm talking about they love some coons. They love some. They probably got pet coons. That's how much I love coons.
Democrats love coons too because they coddle them. But you know,
I'm saying from a political standpoint, though, is what I'm saying. It's like Democrats.
Well, yeah, it's just like your boy.
Yeah, Democrats are more like to argue. True.
What's name? But
yeah, but you know, that's McConnell's son-in-law, I think. But what I'm saying is that from a political standpoint, Democrats are so passive. And man, we're not trying to make this another political joint, but Democrats are so passive that they will attack that particular coon on the merits of their political stance. Do you understand what I'm saying? They will attack them on the merits of what they're actually saying and not actually who they are. Well, Republicans, they don't mind getting down in the dirt and saying, you cheated on your wife, You're getting illegal money. You see what I'm saying? Yeah, Democrats don't do that. You see what I'm saying? They try to fight fair when it's not a fair fight. And that's why I say that Republicans are, you know, they love coons. Because they'll support
I mean the mindset is winning. So it's not about fairness. And Richard Spencer, who is the preeminent he actually I think founded the alt-right as a termed organization or following of alt-right, He actually had said, and I remember a few years ago on Roland Martin's show, he said, "No, it's about winning."
Right, that dude is super focused
on fairness.
Yep,
and that's the mentality, and that's, you know, it's not. I don't want diversity and inclusion. I don't want anything that makes me feel equal. Because if I feel equal to you, then I have to come out with some assets. I gotta write a check. I have to share, you know, my space, my asset.
I have to share what I'm selling.
What, are you fucking kidding me? Equal to me? Do you know who I am? You know,
right. The audacity to think that equality is within the you know, within the reach of your palms is absurd.
Yeah. So, you know, I always look at equality discussion like this. It's like someone, let's just say in this case, let's say a white person that you know, or I mean don't know, coming to your family. You just had a relative, your grandmother died, and the white person's coming in to tell you how the burial should be, how the will should be out. You know what I'm saying? Like, they have some equal part in the discussion of your family. You know what I'm saying? Like, no, who are you? What are you talking about? You know, this is my family. It's my table. Right. You know what I'm saying? So it's, you can't expect someone to share. Like, so that's why the word equal and equality, I usually just, it's really about equity, you know? So, you know, I just take the L out, if you will, but we have to know that they think of winning, those who have that mindset. And that's what we need to, you know, really.
Yeah, and not only that, I mean, winning, and to a greater point, the procurement and the retention of as much power as possible.
Yeah, yeah, power. That, so when that, you win, you're in a power position when you win. So yeah, that's a direct effect.
Yeah. So, but anyway, man, let's get off these crazy ass people, man, because they are crazy. Let's talk a little bit of Black History talk, man. And I, you know, this isn't going to be the classroom version of Black History. It's like I said on the previous show, I'm not spoon feeding anybody information. You go get your knowledge, man. We need functioning minds to go out there and to delve into the history of Black history, if you will, because our history has such depth. You know, I got like a ton of books back here about Black history, and you know, some more in my garage and some more in my closet. Yeah. I mean, it's Black history is all around us, man. I'm gonna let you start off, man, because I know it's a big thing to you.
No, I mean, you could have continued, man. You know, Black History Month is, when people say month, right? Hey, man, they just give us a month. Well, that's them per se, right?
Yeah, that's for them.
Who was it? Gerald Ford that made it a month? I forget, it was Gerald Ford or Jimmy Carter. I forget that, where it actually became a. I'll look it up, but. But anyway, shout out to our ancestor Carter G. Woodson and his strife towards, you know, it really started out as a week of acknowledgement, and I think it moved to a month as it was so designated, I think, across the country.
Mm-hmm.
One of the presidents there in the 70s. But anyway, we should always think of Black history beyond what people want us to see and know about it. It goes back to a theme of we don't need their approval. You make Black history what it is for you. I mean, start with your home. You, like you just turn around and showed your books, right? And then your children should walk in your room, that room that you're in now, and can gather from what I see from behind you several themes of what Black history is, from Marvin Gaye, right, to Notorious B.I.G.
Huh? I said, you saw that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And so, in the books, I mean, that room alone could be a Black history museum within itself, you know what I'm saying, to the minds of someone who are younger. Because you got to think, we live more than half our lives, statistically. It's about the children. It should be about who we pass and whatever we know, whatever we have, hopefully some tangibles we can pass. It's really for them. So it's the whole our history versus his story versus our story type of thing. And to me, it's about celebrating the greatness, the brilliance of who we are as a melanated people. And that should be 365. I saw a funny clip. It was Morgan Freeman. He was on 60 Minutes, I think some years ago. And he said he thinks Black history is ridiculous. And he said, why? I said, how are you gonna relegate my history to 1 month? He's like, do you celebrate white history? And the guy sort of didn't say nothing. He said, well, I'm Jewish. He said, well, do you want a Jewish History Month? He said, no. He said, ah. So, I mean, from his standpoint, Morgan was just saying, this thing is bigger than, you know, 30 days or 28 days, 29 days in February. This thing is every day. We should live it as such. You know, how you have it? This is a picture of Marcus Garvey's Black Star Line Company. The building is a picture of the building, office building. And behind me is a stock certificate for the Black Star Line. It's a copy, it's not an original. Or else I'd be doing it pretty big. But that's a stock certificate, which reminds me of the economics that was going on in the early 1900s. Right. With the Black man from Jamaica who comes, you know, and is doing, trying to do things for himself. And then, of course, I'm not sure if you can see Black Wall Street. And these are things, I have books as well outside the camera, but these are things that we should educate our friends, whoever comes in our home, and just share stuff, man. You've heard me on this podcast before share certain books. Particularly a Neely Fuller's book, the code, compensatory code concept book. Just share with people, text, like take a snapshot of the cover. That's Black history. Just sharing and giving information, trying to help. It's Black empowerment. It's really, you know, understanding our brilliance beyond this soil too. It's not just in the United States. You know, what do you know about Mansa Musa, one of the richest men of all times in the Mali Empire? You can go even further back. In my son's room, right? My son, he's 7. Right now, he aspires to be an architect. It may change next year, right? Who knows, right? But everything that, if he says that, that's how do I inspire him? So in his room, he has a picture of Imhotep. Imhotep was the a brilliant African brother from the Kemet Kushite region of Africa, which is modern day Egypt and Sudan, who designed the first step pyramid in the world, documented. The pyramid of Djoser, I believe it's called, in Saqqara. And he was also not only an architect, but he was the first physician to successfully have conduct surgery as well. The Hippocratic Oath that doctors take comes from Hippocrates, if I'm saying it's not his name right, the Greek, the father of medicine. You read Hippocrates, he learned from Imhotep. So, I mean, you know, all of Greek culture came from African culture, Kemetic culture. I mean, that's documented. So these are some of the things that we have to, you know, take a step higher, because everything in our culture here in the United States comes from Europe, right? From Greek, from Rome, from Britain, you know, our mother. So it's like, well, what happened before then? Right. You know what I'm saying? What is the source of things? And we shouldn't be scared of that. But unfortunately, a lot of us are scared of the truth. And it's a hard pill to swallow. People who want to, they don't want to cross their religious beliefs. They might find out something that happened, maybe predated something. Books that predated their political affiliations. You know what? Nah, I'm gonna get out your comfort zone. Black history is beyond you. It's really it's bigger. It's bigger than that. And I don't know, man. I think it's just something that we need to take on ourselves to study and learn about, not just people. You know what I'm saying? And certain events, but like just keep studying, keep reading. I mean, it's, you know, just still learning. That should be our motto, still learning. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Man, as far as Black history to me, man, it's I get kind of frustrated with it because I see the, not necessarily the support, but the patronization of our community when it comes to corporations, sports leagues, mm-hmm. You know, it's a lot of different things, man, to where, you know, they make you feel or attempt to make you feel as though they are down for the cause. And it's like, I can't see into someone's heart, but I kind of know if it looks like a duck, it's a motherfucking duck, you know? And I know when people are trying to, you know, they're trying to just patronize you, man. And, you know, imagine what would happen if our counterparts took the type of deep dive that you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
You understand what I'm saying? History's a motherfucker, man, and it's a trap in some ways because people have taken a revisionist pen to a lot of different things, like, and institutions, like you said, that
changed the narrative,
life changed a lot, man. They've changed a lot mm-hmm. right in front of our faces. And so, I think that Black History Month per se, it's needed, but it's aggravating sometimes because the depth as to which it's actually explored should be an ongoing course in school, like American history, like, say, you know, in the social sciences, in that particular realm. When you're talking about world history,
mm-hmm.
you know, I mean, everybody knows how, you know, what was it called? The Berlin Congress that divided up Africa, where these black folks decided to.
1890s or something.
Yeah, I decided that they say, you know what, fuck it, let's just take Africa. You know, mm-hmm. they talk about that, but they don't, but, you know, a lot of folks, a lot of schools, and I went to a PWI, and so I know this for a fact. And the funny thing is that, you know, I had a minor in African studies. So, you know, there's a lot of stuff that was taught by people that were from Africa. I had some of the dopest African professors that put me up on a lot of game, but still, there was still not that much. They can only go so far. And I mm-hmm. think that it should be a requirement for white folks to go to these particular classes. There was one white guy that was an African studies class, but it was on African film history and things like that. So, which led to some of the cultural references and cultural images sparked debate and dialogue, because obviously he, white dude from South Carolina, he had absolutely no fucking clue. So, but I say that to say, because I mean, he was a good dude. He was just asking thoughtful, legitimate questions. So, you know, I ain't got no beef with him, had no beef with him, but My point being is that I think that those types of classes, that type of dialogue, you know, white folks should have the type of exposure to that. From a curriculum standpoint, it should be in high schools. If you really want to, because some of the things about Black history, African history, ancient history, some of those things aren't pretty either. It's not all glorious.
Mm-hmm.
To say that, hey, you right. know, we're the righteous people of the no, there's a lot of really grimy, dirty shit that's gone on in history from the beginning of time. You know what I'm saying? So I mean, I don't think that, you know, I'm saying like, oh, African and ancient history, it's this wonderful thing. No, it's a lot of grimy shit. But nevertheless, there is some very very informative and very educational stories and about empires, about, like you said, about sciences, architecture, mathematics, a lot of different things out there that people could benefit from as far as learning, you know, where their origins are from, and you know, to kind of get shit straight. And it's not because, you know, as a person of African descent, that's like, okay, yeah, we're so much better or any of that, but it's the origin of the earth.
Yeah.
It's there. You know what I'm saying? I mean, and these are things that are, I don't want to get off into a whole bunch of other shit, but.
No, I mean, that's right.
You understand what I'm saying, though. It's like, I mean, yeah. People don't understand what the, you know, our history, and I guess my, let me circle back to, because I got way off. Let me circle back to what I was wanting to say. What's frustrating about the current state of Black History Month is that a lot of people, Black people specifically, I don't even know how white people feel. I don't even really care sometimes, but what frustrates me is that Black folks think that our history was caught up in what happened in the Middle Passage and when we landed on these coastal places and these islands and all these other spots. They think that's where the history starts. Like, right. like we were just sitting there and got,
right.
And that's what frustrates me. I think that should be part of the historical curriculum that is taught in schools and at the collegiate level. And in, depending on what program you go through, as far as your African studies, it is taught. It's how I learned it. I kind of already knew because I've been militant like a motherfucker. I've been researching for years, ever since I was, you know, 17, 18 years old. But, you know, my school did teach some of that ancient history that was really informative. And I just think that's, if we got more of that formal instruction from people that were really, and I'm going to use this term loosely, but scientifically plugged into, because it is a social science, you know, history is social. But scientifically locked into that particular specialty to where they can impart the proper knowledge or at least give you the keys to even more research. Because I got news for you, Black folks. If you're getting your Black history every day for the month of February off a meme on Facebook or Instagram, man, you're doing it wrong. You know,
doing yourself an injustice. Yeah.
And sometimes you're doing it wrong, man. And so, you know, I just feel like there's so much to learn, because a lot of shit that they put out on Facebook and shit, man, is not even really true. Or it's a variation of the truth, and that's the danger.
Yeah, watered down.
Right, and that's the danger. It needs to be, all the history needs to be corralled. It needs to be like a clearinghouse or something where we can. Oh, that link that I sent you. Damn, man, I need to find that link again. Because that brother had a lot of stuff. That free link that I sent you that had all those books and those movies. And you remember that?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I need to find that again. I need to get some more stuff out of there. But yeah, man, I mean, it's a frustrating time of year for me because I feel like that we're lazy with it, man. We're lazy with the...
Yeah,
research. We're lazy with the research. We're lazy with the way we deliver knowledge to our next generation. And I can tell that by the way that some of these young kids are acting. We didn't do our job in regards to filling their heads with the right information.
Yeah, and unfortunately, a lot of us don't know. So you don't know what you don't know, no matter what age or stage you are in life. What you don't know what you don't know. So how can I teach someone something if I wasn't taught it?
But I think
that's part of the issue.
But
miseducation is deep. It's deep. And when we talk about educating Black kids, this is a great part of it. But what you're saying is starting with history. I didn't really get into history until I probably graduated from high school. That's when I was like 18, 19. I was like, wait a minute, what have I been missing? Like some of the deep research stuff that you were talking about earlier. I didn't really get deep into it until, I was 19, 20 years old, where someone could have really, I should have been like 10 years old digging up some stuff, mm-hmm. but it just didn't interest me the same way. But I mean, I think you're pointing on, I think it's just, we have to do our parts as adults to, okay, I know now, so how do I pay it forward? How do I pass this on? And talking about the school system, I mean, the majority of Black students go to public schools. And if you don't have the curriculum, stuff that's telling you in the curriculum, right? And the right teacher too. So you might have, you do all this work to get the books right, the information right, in books and whatever, through technology and stuff that, they got iPads and things and laptops and classrooms in some schools now.
Which is all the more reason that we should be more, that's all the more reason why that we should be more educated on this shit, bro. That's
right. I got information is like, at the tip of your fingers, but you got to get the right people in there to teach it. Because what if you hire a bunch of coons that's teaching information? All right, we got the information for you. Boom, go teach it. And they don't teach it, right? So if we all have the same mindset, we can collectively have the same mindset, then the majority of us can formally teach it in the classrooms, and then informally, as we go and mentor people through life, whether it's our children or not, you have to have that mentality. It's just like on a previous episode, we're talking about, you can't necessarily, you got to change with the times. If someone in 1960 marching for voting acts is different from today marching, for voting. It's just a different vibe. It's a different need at the time. So
the stakes are different.
Right. So, I mean, and the irony is, Carter G. Woodson, who's noted as the father of Black history in this country, his most prolific book is the Miseducation of the Negro. Mm-hmm. So, there's some irony there as far as miseducation. And he was, read up on him, man. He was a writer, man. He criticized the church at a time where, churches were more of a refuge for us than ever before. He spoke out when he joined the NAACP. Du Bois was sort of running it. He came in swinging, man. He came in demanding that the information that we, all right. He was like a go-getter. Like, let's get this information out. Let's strategize. Then he wanted the crisis paper that Du Bois had. He was like, let's get into the hands of the community. What are we doing? I think he was trying to broaden the scope of it. And he seemed to be a rider, man.
Well, shout out to the good brother, man. When you talk about the church, man, that's another thing that I feel like that. Because I stay in trouble with the church folks, right? I stay in trouble with the church. But I think that just like you alluded to before, I think that if history was researched and then taught properly, that I think a lot of the institutions that are holding us back, just because to me, and I say it again, and I've said it, or I've said this on Wax once before, but now people get to see my face when I say it. I think that the Black church as it's constituted right now makes Black people weak as fuck. It does. And you know, I feel like that it has done more of a disservice to the multitudes of Black people than just about any other institution that is on earth. I mean, it is mm-hmm. in my opinion, it is an arm of white supremacy. That is yeah. my wholehearted opinion. I don't give a fuck what y'all think about it. That is my
opinion. I agree.
So, but you, I just want to see my face when I said it, because I've said it before. You can listen to. I've said that what about 10 times on 10 different shows?
Yeah, I mean, it's an economic engine that doesn't have any fucking lube. Right. You know, as something that can advance, you have the ears of most of the majority of Black. We in America, so Black Americans, you have the ears and the attention of most of your Black people for at least 2 hours. Mm. I mean, on a pre-COVID, right? So church.
Things are a little different now. But you
have that. You have a collection, collection of money that goes around that is astronomical, that can end poverty in your own neighborhood. I mean, you know, you got some smaller churches. You got smaller churches that just, you know, there to sort of, you know, help be a refuge for people mentally. But you got mega churches who, I mean, have assets, bro. And I used to be a member of a mega church that was debt free, making great decisions and things. But and actually, I mean, you know, they give. I could see where giving was being done, mm-hmm. but if you think about it. Those Jewish synagogues and the, you know, even some of the mosques, what have you, they form systems and institutions. And institutions are like give and take, like, you know, individual family needs, like on a larger scale, their own schools, like literally a solid school that is a pipeline from K to 12. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? That sort of builds you. We can model some of those things if we just sort of put our priorities in, you know, in focus.
There's a church here that does that. I'm not shouting out any churches, but there's a church here that does that. You probably know what I'm thinking of.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, they got the whole pipeline, the schools, the housing, it's a lot of different things that they do. Yeah. Which
I applaud the ones that do. But the other 98%, you know, has a lot of work to do, man.
Yeah, I mean, you go in thinking that you're going to get something, and you don't leave out, but you know, with thoughts and prayers, man. It's kind of like this, you know, when something happens on a massive level, all thoughts and prayers. That's what you get when you leave out. You paying if you pay. If you tithe and you paying. You come out with awesome prayers.
The hope dealer.
Yeah, you know, you come out with wholesome prayers. So, you know, and I've said this, you know, before as well. It's like, you know, if that's the kind of stuff that you believe in, man, more power to you. I mean, I don't knock people for their beliefs, because that's part of the idealistic, painting that people paint of America. That's one of the things that I actually like. You know, you can think your way, I can think my way. It doesn't mean that we necessarily hate each other. It doesn't mean that I'm going to try to do this or do that to you. You just think differently, mm-hmm. feel differently, you worship differently, because being worshipful and being submissive to, you know, any type of deity, you know, it can be, there's some nobility in that, you know, to a certain degree. You know, so I respect it. Not saying that it's something that I would do, but I respect it. You see what I'm saying? I respect people who have those particular beliefs, but as a black man, I got to call a spade a spade. The money pipeline of religion as it's currently constituted is not benefiting us not one fucking bit.
Not at all.
I mean, so, you know, everything, just like you said, that two hour meeting that you get, I mean, you know, it's okay to have your, to give reverence and all these things and to rejoice. But man, I mean, there's opportunities to educate. There's opportunities to give current event knowledge. You know, it's like y'all getting money, but it's like you're getting money, but you don't want to talk to people about how to make money, keep money, take that 10% that they're giving you and to put that into a fund over the course of time. You got people that's been going to church and been giving 10% of everything that they got for 30 years.
They could be millionaires, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But you don't teach that kind of knowledge. You know, you got people that go to these mega churches that are heads of companies and things like that. I mean, we're the committees that help your parishioners bring themselves up to a point where their, you know, their conditions could be better, to where their education is better. You know, why aren't you paying for college for some of the most talented people in your congregation to have kids? You see what I'm saying? I mean, why aren't you doing these things? You know, and like I said, they're one-offs to where, you know, people are getting it right. But I'm just saying, from what I've seen over my lifetime, this shit ain't happening.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
And it stems from, unfortunately, it stems from slavery too.
And that's what we're talking about, because that's part of black history. The trap of ensnaring you in the thought of your eternal lasting life after you go through absolute hell on earth, but you got to pay to get there. Think about it for a second. You had to pay 10% to go through hell on earth to get a heavenly reward when you die.
That's one.
You signing up for that, bro?
Huh?
You signing up for that? Is that a program you want?
Nah. Not at all. It didn't make logical sense.
It doesn't make sense.
We're scared to think outside the box when it comes to stuff. And I think that's Black Empowerment 101 is you just have to, it's about a paradigm shift as well. And again, I don't criticize anyone. My religious ideologies have taken a journey, and life is a journey altogether anyway. So I don't judge hastily on folk. But I do have an understanding. I can see from a different viewpoint nowadays about how it's been a lot less effective than you think it is. As an institution that is moving, you have captured the minds and the souls. Your minds, bodies, and souls of Black folks on a day-to-day basis, definitely a week basis. How do you move them, right? How do you get that Nat Turner mentality? Like, wait a minute now. All right, if I'm going to use this book, this one book out of thousands, by the way, but I'm going to use this one book, and I'm going to pull out some things. You know, I'm going to use this to empower myself. Shoot. You know, how you gonna put something in here that, you know, slaves are to be, you know, held to their masters or whatever? Yeah, that don't make sense to me. Something has to say, you know what? It doesn't make sense. I don't care what book it is, right? Religious or not. What I'm reading, does this make sense? If you're trying to indoctrinate me, let me share this with you. When I just said the word indoctrinate, my son, 2 weeks ago, he's in Cub Scouts. And so he said, after the scouting, they do it on Zoom, he said, why do we say the Pledge of Allegiance at school and at Cub Scouts? Right? And I was like, son, let me sit down. You know what I'm saying?
One second, my boy.
Yeah. Turn the TV off.
Right.
And those are the type of questions that I love to hear from my Black children That's a simple question. And I didn't, you know, I was like, wow. Because, well, he knows that I don't say like the Pledge of Allegiance. That's, you know, me and his mother. And that's our, you know, I have my reasons and I share with him the reasons why. Mm. But that question came out of nowhere, man. And it allowed me an opportunity to educate. You know what I'm saying? That's just that education. And that's going to be reciprocated. Children listen, you know. Right. Children are listening when you don't think that they are.
The conversation that I had with my daughter today, before the show today, was about cultural appropriation. Mm. So, I mean, I feel you, man. These kids are built a lot different. Mm-hmm. Built a lot, yes. Different, bro. So, and she just turned 12. So, you know, I mean, she's, wow. Yeah, my 12-year-old's pretty woke though, bro. I mean, you know, she's you know, embracing her, you know, her natural hair. She wears a natural now and stuff like that.
Good.
You know, real confident and nice. And it's hard being a woman in this world, man. It's, and especially, you know, being a black woman. So that's woman, it's yeah. hard. It's mm-hmm. hard, you know, raising a black woman, bro. That shit is the. I mean, and it ain't even close. The hardest thing that I've ever done in my life is to try to raise a daughter with enough discipline, you know, from a father figure, having balancing the discipline with the education, with the self-sufficiency, with the, you see what I'm saying? I mean, because it's hard because, you know, I am what she sees as far as black men goes. You see what I'm saying?
You're the example. Yeah. The
example. So it's, mm-hmm. so it's like, you know, that tightrope, bro, that's a tightrope for your ass, bro.
Man, I can imagine. I mean, I can only imagine because I don't have a daughter, but I respect it. I have several friends who have multiple daughters as well. And you're right, man. She's going to use you as the pivot for how she sees men that she's interested in, you know, as a mate one day, as a boss one day, you know. And so you're it. You're that image. You're the first thing that she has to go off of.
Right.
And, you know, that's very endearing. And so what you spill into her, that's what Black history is what you spill into her, what I spill into my son. And, you know, how can I answer those tough questions and bring together? I'm not afraid to talk to him about anything, mm-hmm. about really true things that have happened.
Right.
Where some parents may say he's not ready for that. Personally, everyone's different. I respect everyone's parental, you know, decisions. But with me, if we're talking about a subject, son, I'm going to tell you the truth. Like, he can tell you about the Civil War and why it happened. Mm. You know what I'm saying? And the other day, they're doing something with Teddy Roosevelt, who was a president around 1900, 1901 or something. Mm-hmm. And we were talking. I said, well, what did you learn about it? What did he do good for people? And he told me. And before I could say the next thing, he said, I don't know what he did for black people, though. You know what I'm saying? I don't know what he did good for black people, because my son knows in 1901, times were different.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Why? Because he knows about Black Wall Street that happened in 1921, 100 years this year, by the way, bro.
Right.
So his mind is already, his black history is thinking, well, historically in 1901, you know, and that just fills my heart. Like, okay, now we have dialogue. I'm having dialogue with a 7-year-old about how the president of the United States may have treated some black people in 1901. Will he get that in school? Will he get that in our school system just to have a dialogue at that age?
Probably not.
You know what I'm saying? To where he's
coming. They'll give a high level overview of the content and the things of that nature, but they're not going to deep dive into it. They won't do what you would do.
Yeah. So it's. And I don't expect teachers to go head first on a lot of things. I understand, but that's the whole thing. If I say I understand And the next generation say, well, I understand. Well, where do we put pressure on these school systems to say, no, damn it, I don't understand. I'm about to really go ahead first on certain things, you know?
I will say this though, man. I'm not gonna tell you where my daughter goes to school. I mean, you know where she goes to school, I think, but
yeah, yeah.
Shout out to her charter school because let me tell you, bro. And actually, shout out to her elementary school that she went to too, man, because all of the social studies courses, man, are like, they've flipped a lot of the narratives. I mean, just for prime example. And feel me on this, because like I said, this is a small thing. You're talking about elementary school where, you know, you're trying to get the basic skills down, writing, computation, comprehension, and things like that. But my daughter came home and told me about the atrocities that Columbus committed. Mm. She learned that in school. You see what I'm saying? Cool. So there is a, you know, and the question was, why do we even celebrate this clown when he did all this? You see, so, you know, that's, you know, shout out to the school for that. I mean, because that we had really, really intense discussion this year, this was 2020, about that. So, you know, there is a change because she got a lot of, also on the line of curriculum, and it's really important to have Black representation in the classroom, man. I mean, I was lucky, man. When I think about, and I was having a Facebook conversation with somebody about this. So I was thinking about, you know, growing up in, you know, because I spent my first few years of elementary school in Louisville, Kentucky, and I didn't have, I can't even remember a Black teacher, you know. I mean, because it was, you know, back in elementary school days, you stayed the whole day in one class. Now these kids are changing classes at second grade and stuff like that. But my first grade teacher was white. My second grade teacher was white. My third grade teacher was actually a Black woman. I had moved to Tennessee. My fourth grade teacher was white. My fifth grade teacher was Black, but I changed classes and I had a mix. But when I started getting up into high school, I mean, middle school, they called it junior high back then, junior high, high school, I had a lot of representation of strong, educated men and women through my real formative years that kind of put me up on a lot of different. I mean, I was really, really lucky. When I look back on that time, you know, growing up in Chattanooga, Tennessee, going to school and where I, you know, consider my hometown because of, you know, I'm a Louisville native, but I grew up in Chattanooga, Tennessee. That's where all my friendships are, mostly. You know, when I look back at that particular time, I had so many Black role models that were making their own, we're talking conversations about Black history, they were making their own Black history based off the springboard of the generation before them, which was two generations before me at that particular time. You think about that. There's a teacher here who's coming, who's a generation before me, who's capitalizing on the opportunities that were made, you know, just a generation before where those people had no rights. My teacher didn't get rights until 64. And I'm the first generation to be born with all of my inalienable rights intact. You think about this shit. That's history. That's the type of appreciation that we should have. That's why the representation is important, because I had that fire put in me about where I was coming from. That's the funny thing about it, man. God bless old folks, man, because I'll be one, hopefully, God willing, soon. You know, I say that tongue in cheek, since we're talking about the religion thing. You know, but the funny thing about old folks is they don't let you forget that you're making jelly from the fruit that they shook off the trees.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And that is part of the Black history thing that we need to understand. I think a lot of that is getting lost because our need for immediate gratification, the struggle is not really embraced. You know, a struggle now is that it's like, oh, I started off with no followers, now I got 10,000. That's a strong ass of motherfuckers. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, the game has changed so much because, I mean, especially with the pandemic, there's less interaction. There's less mission. It's like, you couldn't be a motherfucking griot in these days. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. You would have no job being a griot. Nobody wants to hear your stories, man. It's just on the internet. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So if y'all don't know what a griot is, look it up. G-R-I-O. Just look it up. Those people were a godsend to me, and I didn't even know it until now. Being a middle-aged man, I recognize what kind of a boost that they were actually giving me by being strong as they were, by being as resolute as they were, by being as tempered as they were. Because I'm, you think about, I was hothead, I was emotional, passionate, wore my emotions on my sleeve. But they gave me the right amount of temperance to deal with the situations that they knew that I was going to be faced with. And I think that's history in and of itself. It's like you take the opportunity of the day with the lessons of yesterday, with the struggles and the brutality of the day before that. You see what I'm saying? I mean, those are the type of things that I think that we're losing. And I think that's why the shift is necessary when it comes to Black history, because there's not enough. Obviously there are the social issues, the social injustice issues of today that we deal with, but those things are similar to the things that have been experienced before. They're just videoed now. You see what I'm saying? I mean, that part of the landscape hasn't changed, but I think that the need for and it's going back to what we were saying on another show, the need for a deep burning desire to destroy the mechanism of white supremacy and to get what's due for us in the way of economic equality, social equality, judicial equality. All those things. We had that fire back then. That's what I'm getting at. We had that type of fire back then.
Yeah.
But now it's like it's just watered down. It's like now those tools that they have, the media, the social media, the motherfuckers talking their ass off now, bro. And it's like they ain't got nothing up here.
So in that, and unfortunately it's by design too. We talked about integration before, and so unfortunately that shift. And when you said back when, I was thinking back in the 60s and 50s, where it really, really had some true riders. It sort of watered down after 1970. A lot of things are integrated. We just feel like we made it. And so maybe I don't have to. So I'll, hey.
Put that little biscuit, bro.
You want to learn Black history? We're going to send you to this school over here to learn Black history instead of everything was, it was self-reliance. I wear a shirt with Garvey on it, but he learned his mentor, whom he tried to meet, but he didn't, was Booker T. Washington, and who spoke a lot about self-reliance too. I encourage, as we talk about Black history, I encourage people to really pick up, read Up From Slavery. Autobiography is one of his. He had several autobiographies, but I think that was his first, Up From Slavery. That book is the book that inspired Marcus Garvey and Elijah Muhammad. And so that's my book note of the day. But self-reliance, man, it's about a mentality. All of us. I mean, me too. I hold myself accountable for things I'm not doing and I should be, but at least, you gotta at least have the mentality to start with, the thirst to make Black history what it is, what we're talking about here. It's bigger than what the media is. It's bigger than what you see on TV. The symbolisms that they want you to sort of
That's my frustration. It's like, you know, everybody wants the first place trophy for their Black History Project kind of shit. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's like, you know, what corporation can pay tribute to,
right?
You know, to it's crazy, you know. And in the meantime, you know, a lot of these companies don't have any representation. Even if they have a diversity and inclusion arm of their company, they have no representation at the table for any type of executive decisions, from marketing to supply chain to operations to, you know, to strategy. None of that. You know, it's one of those things where, like, who are you trying to fool?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know, man. It's you know, I like the fact that we acknowledge history. You know, I don't want people to get it twisted. I like the fact that we acknowledge history. I just want people to be a little bit less inviting to people who want to co-opt it to make you think that they're really down with the cause. I mean, that's another issue that I have with the time, because this shit right here is like fucking Black Friday every day of February for corporations. Throw an ad out there. Let's see if we can hook them with this money. You know, we down. Boom. Mm-hmm. Let me throw the fair skin, curly hair mixed woman in there in my advertisement and pass her off as Black.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Let me get the mixed kids out there. Let me pass them off as Black. You know, here you go, Black people. We down. Look at this commercial. You know, they run commercials all that run. Oh, bruh, I done seen so many.
And that's what I said.
People see that. And my whole thing is, I am, as pro-Black as I am really a fan of capitalism. I am a capitalistic supporter. As long as you're not putting your foot on the necks and the backs of other people to get where you're trying to go. But free market is... I mean, that is what it is. It's like you eat what you kill. Right? You know what I'm saying? You eat what you kill. And so, I mean, but people don't understand. It's like they're getting money. They're not doing anything illegal, but it's disingenuous at the very least. You understand what I'm saying?
It's a double-edged sword.
Yeah.
It is what it is. I see what you're saying. The concept of capitalism, I agree with, but how the method in which it has been carried out through the systems and institutions that we know has been very corrupt, and has been to the chagrin and to the disadvantage of Black people. So it's like you love a system that you know says the rich is going to get richer, and the poor are going to stay poor. Right. But we love it because the concept is that it should work right. But we know that people are not going to really work.
Right. It's I love the opportunity there. You know what I'm saying? I'm not.
Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying, man? It's like, I love the fact that our little company can start from nothing and put a liquor out on the market. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, that's something that doesn't happen in, like I say, a caste society. Where, you know, where, like, if your dad's a blacksmith, you a fucking blacksmith. If your dad makes shoes, you make fuck shoes. You see what I'm saying? I mean, there's you know, those type of opportunities is what I'm talking about. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, greed is prevalent in America. America was built off greed, death, rape, pillage. Yeah. It is what it is, bro. I mean, that's what that is. So, you know, that's going to be the fabric that's woven, and, you know, that's the blood that runs through the veins of America. You see what I'm saying? But you still got to make, you know, you got to make chicken salad out of chicken shit sometimes, bro. You know,
chicken salad out of chicken shit.
Yep, you got to do sometimes. So, but back to the major point that we were talking about, man, you know, the Black History Month part of it. And I would really like my brothers and sisters to go out there and you're going to pass information along, make sure that it's correct information. You know, don't repeat shit that you see on social media without vetting the information, without doing your research. That's what this shit is for, man. Social media should be a tool. Just like, you know, if you're a first time viewer of the podcast, it's a tool. That's why we don't pawn shit off as facts on this show. It's like, there's things that we maybe believe that we have opinions of, but challenge anything that you want. What we say, go out there and do the research. I would prefer that you say that I lie about every fucking thing that I'm saying because you've done your research.
Yeah.
That would make me fucking proud. You know what I'm saying? Because, but the fact of the matter is that I know what I know and I feel what I feel. And that is why we're not going to say, hey, this is the truth. This is the truth. This is the truth. This is the truth. And whatever you think doesn't matter. We want to spark the internal debate within the community to say, hey, look, this is doing us some good. This shit isn't doing us any good. Just like the church thing.
Yeah.
We think one way, some people think another way. Find out which side that you're on and take the emotion out of it. Take all the emotion out of it and take your viability and your sustainability as a person and as part of the community as the most serious thing out there. When you look at it from that particular perspective.
That's right.
You know what I'm saying? When you look at it from
that perspective. What you just described as a leader. So you are your leader. Your leader is actually the code. So what you just described is a code of conduct. So if you live, if we each of us lived under a particular code of conduct with the same mentality, then that's our leader. And unfortunately, we look forward to individuals to be our leaders or certain groups or themes. Well, Black Lives Matter is my leader. Well, okay, well, what is Black Lives Matter? Then now you got yourself into a whole different world. So I agree with you, Sam, but I just wanted to add to that is that's really self-leadership.
Right. That's what's up, man. So, man, you got anything else, man? I mean, you know, happy Black motherfucking Black History Month.
Yeah, man.
I mean, it is what it is, man. I mean, power to people. People want power. Man,
just power 65, bro.
People want the power. No justice, no peace, you know, whatever. I mean, whatever you're saying, man. But I mean, on some real shit though, man. I mean, people get out there and do your research, man. And it doesn't matter what doesn't matter what you currently believe. You should not want to. And this is going to be, just some housekeeping real quick. I put out on Instagram before that, you know, I'm gonna have a little segment where we'll be talking about, you know, business strategies and things like that, you know, coming from a African-American Black person perspective of how you can conduct yourself and be a little bit more successful. Or even if you're already successful, maybe you need to fine tune some things. We all can use some of that. I can still use some of that, but what I know and what I know works, I'm going to try to impart that to our listeners, you know, somewhere down the line, some tips and some tricks and some philosophies and some principles. But along those particular lines, you have to, you know, keep your focus on what's going to be the most important to you and to your family. It's like it's okay to have a certain belief. It's okay to have that. But if you research and you take the emotion out of it, sometimes the things that you think are the realest, most powerful things in your life are not necessarily that. And that's not a knock on religion or anything else. That's just the facts. That's just the facts. So there's only one thing that's gonna put us in a better position as a community, and that's knowledge, that's research, that's economic empowerment, but unity on you know, most, overall. And just like you always say, man, the code. Stay on code. Stay on code. So I had something else, man, but I forgot it, man. You know how it is when you get my age, bro.
That's right, man. That's
shit on your mind.
that's a good ending right there. Wise words. So
that's what's up.
Yeah.
So you got anything else, brother?
That's it, man.
All right, man. We'll let everybody know that we're still on in addition to Apple Podcasts, we're still on Google Play, or Google Podcast. Now I think they call it Stitcher. We're on Spotify, Podbean. A lot of different platforms where you can catch us at. If you like this particular medium, the video medium, as well, you know, obviously go to the YouTube channel, ICBW Podcast. I could be wrong, but I doubt it, whatever. You can get all that information there as far as, our IG information, our Facebook information. We appreciate you rocking with us, however you get it. You know, this is still very, very new to us as far as the video thing goes. But I kind of like it, man. I kind of like doing this, man.
Yeah,
it's pretty good. It's easy to turn around stuff too. So, but I think that, you know, just from a tooting our own horn standpoint, if you have not listened to all of the episodes up until the point that we went to video, you're missing out because there's a lot of issues that we've addressed from, you know, hot topics, top tens, black business owners, freaking R. Kelly, you know, all kind of shit that we talked about. Mm-hmm. In a serious, I mean, Me Too movement. Me Too was like, I think, episode 6. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. You know, something like that. I mean, we, you know, we talked about
the N word.
Talked about the N word, HBCUs. Yeah. Is hip hop ruining the community? You know, I mean, a lot of different things that we talked about a lot of different things that. To be honest, man, I hate like a braggart, man, but I think that, you know, 2 years ago we may have been kind of ahead of our time in regards to the content that we were actually putting on wax, because, you know, there's a lot of clown shit that was out there, and it's still prevalent today. And it's like, if you love clown shit, have at it. There's a ton of it out there for you still out there. But I think that we were kind of ahead of the curve on that as far as the content goes, man. And I think that's why our following online, as far as our listenership on Apple Podcasts and other outlets, grew so fast, and why we're still getting hundreds of listens on shit that we made 2 years ago. Because it's fruitful and it's enriching. I mean, not to sound like some kind of commercial, but it's enriching to the soul.
We're selling yogurt and shit.
You know what I'm saying? It's enriching to the soul, because we talked about some really deep shit, bro. We talked about we talked about a lot of shit, bro. I mean, especially on the HBCUs and the sports and shit. That was some of the more recent shit. Like We The Plug, we talked about, you know, us being all the talent and all this other. I mean, we talked about a lot of shit. Talked about the NFL. We talked about a lot of shit, man. That was, and you know, all from an Afrocentric perspective. I mean, we talk about shit, and I've said it before, we talk about shit in a manner that it's going to affect us as a community. You can take it and you can apply it to whatever your situation is, but those are some of the conversations that you may have missed. I invite you to go to Apple Podcasts or, you know, Google Podcasts, whatever platform you're on for your cell phone. And eventually they're all going to be up on YouTube, the audio. We don't have video for the old stuff, but I'm still going to put the audio with, you know, with maybe some pictures up and stuff like that, so you can be able to listen. So it'll all be there on YouTube, but that just takes a little bit of time to do since we just launched the channel a couple of weeks ago. So we definitely invite you to check some of those old episodes out, man. That way you can kind of, when you hear me talking some of the shit that I'm talking, and you hear Reg talking some of the shit that he's talking, you understand the genesis of this shit. You understand where we've gone and where we're going and why we, and where we're going and how we arrived at this particular point, and why we sound like two crazy old ass men at this
point. who are you calling on, man?
You don't do nothing, but you color your shit. Don't get me started. I just happen to be out here being fresh.
No, what are you talking about, man? It's nah. But on that point,
okay, yeah. You're about as natural as an Instagram model, bro. You natural as an Instagram model.
I'm the youth, nigga. I'm the youth.
Yeah, there you go. I'm the youth. But yeah, man. I mean, again, I encourage people to definitely check out. I can't say it enough, man. If you want to actually really figure out what this show is about, I mean, our first episode, "What Is a Real Man," bro. Yeah. You know, I mean, and it wasn't just two dudes after beating a chest. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's, you know, I mean, the props that we give to, you know, to women and the things that, you know, y'all are really missing out. If you haven't checked those things out, you need to check those out. We're not just brand new. We're brand new on YouTube, but we're not brand new. We've been here for 2 years, so going on 3. So get out there and check those old episodes out. Get to know us a little bit better. You can you know, send us a message on Instagram. We're on Instagram at ICBW Podcast. We're on Facebook at ICBW Podcast. You can leave a comment under the video on YouTube. And, you know, I respond to everything, man, good or bad. I mean, if you come at me the wrong way, I might fuck you up. For real. Because, you know, I ain't with that. That's you'll learn that shit, too. I ain't with that bullshit. So, you know, you need to, you know, engage with caution.
Four words. That's the real fresh. That's the real fresh.
It is what it is, man. All right, player.
All right, brother. Be good, be safe, and behave, man.
All right, man. Peace. We out.
Peace, man.
I could be wrong, but I doubt it. So don't enter this debate if you ain't bout it. Reflection and introspect. Make sure that you come correct. Then you should probably hurry. It gets crowded. Bring a friend with you. I could be wrong, but I doubt it. Don't enter this debate if you ain't bout it. Reflection and introspect. Make sure that you come correct. Then you should hurry up. It might get crowded. Bring a friend with you. Expression reds, their curators are cool. The culture and consciousness brought directly to you. Tune in every week for the newest of new and occasional politics as it pertains to you. Divergent point of views make for a whole picture, and we suggest you get your money up and take the shit with you. Ain't no fountain to you, but it's a secret elixir to ensure the black man as a permanent fixture. Standing here in America behind enemy lines, where more often than not my skin's considered a crime. Cops kill us daily and will never do time, while a crooked ass judge decides to fate for mine. One day at a time is what my mama would say, and since mama said living ain't no time to play, and since I got a little game, I'ma give it away. But let's start the show before I get carried away. I could be wrong, but I doubt it. So don't enter this debate if you ain't bout it. Reflection and introspect. Make sure that you come correct. Then you should probably hurry. It gets crowded. Bring a friend with you. I could be wrong, but I doubt it. Don't enter this debate if you ain't bout it. Reflection and introspect. Make sure that you come correct. Then you should hurry up. It might get crowded. Bring a friend with you.
You just tuned in to I Could Be Wrong, But I Doubt It, hosted by Fresh and Reg. Holla back next week.